Hello and welcome to Future Considerations. This is Eleni speaking.
And I'm Dan.
This is Mike. Hi. We're off to a roaring start.
It's a good thing we have an editor. Thank you so much to those of you who listened to our feature film length first episode. Really appreciate it. Hope that we were able to bring you some joy and that you found some of what we had to say interesting. We're excited to be here. We don't really have like a regular schedule. We just kind of do this whenever we feel like we can or want to. And right now we both can and want to. So lucky for you, here we are recording. It is Sunday, February 6th, as of this recording. So if we say something that is later out of date in the next 12 hours, if something happens on Monday, as it usually does, please don't judge us for not covering it yet.
Pretty please and thank you, yes. And thank you for everyone who gave us feedback on the show on Twitter. That was great to see. And thanks for subscribing and telling people all those things are nice things. We like those things. Reviews and all the nice things.
Echo Mike's comments there. It was really nice to hear some good feedback. I'm not a fan of my own voice, but I'm pretty stoked that everybody else liked listening to it and what we had to say. And I felt like it was kind of important for us to, because we all have varying viewpoints and opinions, and I think it was a good mesh. I actually did listen back to it, and I thought we did a pretty good job. So we do have a lot to get to this week, though.
Yeah, things happen, Eleni.
Did they?
A lot of things happen.
I actually literally, like, so much happens in women's hockey that I have, like, selective amnesia where, like, I can only remember stuff that happened, like, in the last 2 or 3 days because the rest of it just doesn't fit in my head. Like, I'm looking at our outline and I'm like, oh, yeah. All that happened. But let's start with something off ice. So shortly after we recorded our last, actually, I literally don't know how much longer it was after we recorded, but at some point in between the last time we did this and now, the PHF Players Association parted ways with their director, Alex Sinatra. And we got like a press release type situation about it that really, it was very tasteful, but I don't think that it explained very much.
Yeah, it was certainly really sudden. It came directly on the wake of Alex Sinatra being on the 32 Thoughts podcast. And for those of you who don't know or follow the men's game, it's like the flagship podcast for insider information for NHL and men's hockey. She was in an interview with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick. She actually said a lot of things that I liked and a lot of things that made me kind of raise my eyebrows. But some of the things she said that I liked were like, yeah, you know, things like we should have a transparent salary. We should have a thing like a salary cap floor and all these things that I was like, yeah, all these things sound great. But I don't know if she said some things that from Dan's story, I'll let Dan kind of comment on this, but Dan had a story for Dance Garden where he spoke to some players and it sounds like they weren't altogether thrilled with some of the things that Alex Sinatra was saying. But again, like, I don't want to feed into like this kind of smoky, like, mystery of what Alex did or didn't do to kind of make the players want to separate with her. Needless to say, it was super surprising because the context for all this is the players asked for an extension to name ahead of the PA. They got that extension. So they got their head of the PA named like in the early days of January. And between then and now, there's been all sorts of things happening in the league, let alone, you know, she just was there, you know, just stepped in that position when that huge $25 million investment announcement was signed. So like, it's certainly a good idea to have a head of the PA for things where you can help players with resources and stuff. So this was pretty surprising to see the third person to hold this role last, I don't even know.
Was it even a week or two weeks? Yeah.
It was pretty short, which obviously is leads to all sorts of scuttlebutt and speculation.
Yeah, I think Dan is extremely plugged in and probably has the best idea of what maybe some of the concerns were. I have some ideas on how to address being without a PA director, but I want to hear what Dan thinks happened. Cause I got told that this was happening like 15 minutes before it dropped. So I had no time to ask questions or process or anything.
So, to answer Mike's question, it was, I think, 25 days. She held the position. I think she was hired officially. Mm-hmm. The announcement at least came on January 3rd. And they released her, what was it, the 27th, I think it was, officially. The way that, I mean, I texted our producer and fearless leader, MJ, and kind of as it was going down in real time, I guess it was that was Thursday. I was minding my own business, just writing a Devil's article, because I hadn't done that in a while. And I got a text that, hey, yeah, so we're moving on from this Alex Sinatra as our PA director. And I was like, wow, like, so when was this decided? And the response was 5 minutes ago. you know, naturally I had a lot of questions, but a lot was going on. And as I wrote in the article that we put up the next day, you know, they were unhappy with how they were being represented on this podcast. I didn't listen to it. So I don't want to speak on something she said or didn't say or how she phrased things. You can comment on that. But I mean, it just seemed really, really crazy that all of a sudden this was happening pretty quick. So what I was told was we're going to make the announcement after the All-Star game. Kind of, let's not let this kind of take away from the weekend, the festivities and everything that goes on with that. And Friday, you know, it was probably like 6 o'clock Eastern time here. I got another text saying, yeah, 7 o'clock, we're announcing this. So something changed in that time period. I don't know Alex personally. I only know a little bit of what I've seen. Maybe they thought she wasn't going to be able to keep her mouth closed for the majority of the weekend because she had been tweeting a lot. The kind of tone of her tweets had changed as well too. So that's just me thinking out loud. Like maybe that was why the timeline moved up. You know, as they put out a nice statement, but I think I still have a lot more questions. I haven't really got the answers to them. I reached out to one player who wasn't really ready to talk about everything yet. So, you know, it's just kind of, we know what we know, and that's pretty much all I've detailed. I don't know if you have heard anything different, Eleni or Mike, but yeah, it was just wild. It's just like there's never a dull moment, right? Like there's always something going on. We thought we were just going to have like a nice, quiet little January, kind of getting past all the COVID cancellations and weather related things and going to have a nice celebration. We have player cards coming out. I thought that was like a really cool thing. And this was just you know, like this one thing just like always pops up and it's like, now we have to talk about this other thing and not talk about the actual games on the ice. And that kind of is where it gets frustrating for me sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I have players that I talk to, and I've talked to them about what happened. I don't really want to go into it because I feel like that's stuff that was shared to me in confidence, and I would never, you know, want to say something that would make any of them feel like they couldn't talk about this stuff. I think it's important for them to talk about it, but I think, to me, what I see generally is that this is a very, hockey is not like other sports, and women's hockey is not like the rest of hockey in a lot of ways. It's a very insular community, and sometimes that can be really limiting. I think that sometimes people feel like, I don't know if gatekept is the right word, but it can be really intimidating. And at the same time, knowing that that's the way that this works, like mostly everyone in women's hockey knows each other. even if they haven't met each other, it's pretty small. Everyone kind of knows everybody else. I think that bringing in someone who has no connection really to it is, for this particular role, is very, very difficult to pull off, because whoever is going to do this job needs to understand so much that isn't said, or is only said, you know, in certain contexts, in order to not accidentally say or do something that is going to be interpreted completely different from, you know, how they would intend it. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it literally is just that, like, it's almost like speaking a different language. And I'll actually, I can, something that we'll talk about later that has to do with one of the games that was played this weekend. It's sort of similar, but I don't think, and I'm speaking as a lawyer, I don't think that a lawyer who is separate from women's hockey entirely is the right person yet for what this job needs to be right now. I think maybe 5 years from now, that's exactly the kind of person you want to hire. But to me, it feels like in hindsight, they took this like massive step ahead of where they are emotionally that didn't work for anybody who was involved. And I think it was a good idea to try it. But I think that, you know, there's got to be some kind of transition in between having a player who they didn't have to explain to, you know, they didn't have to explain to Anya why they felt certain ways about certain things because she was there and she played with them and she got it, to someone that I just don't think there was a very long period of time between when they met her and when they chose for her to do this.
I think that's really fair. Yeah.
Whatever the in-between is, I don't know what it is, but whatever the in-between is, probably is the sweet spot, at least for right now.
I thought a lot of, like, when Alex Sinatra was first announced, I thought there was a lot of value to be had from having someone from outside of hockey, especially someone who had the, you know, one, had the qualifications as a lawyer, who understood contracts, who understood pro sports and what pro sports contracts look like. I was like, these things should all benefit the players. But then, like Eleni just said, like, I can't help but wonder, maybe someone that should be pursued by the players now is like a former player who has a really intimate understanding of what the players' needs are, what those look like. Maybe someone has had experience playing overseas, experience playing in the NWL, you know, PHF. Like, I think that would be really valuable to them. Some of the things that, like, I'll just say what my thoughts were, you know, I'm not trying to get anyone in hot water or make any outlandish statements here, but like, there's a couple things that stood out to me from the podcast, the 32 Thoughts pod. The one that stood out to me the most, really, in terms of like, wow, that was surprising to hear, was just that you could, as someone who was listening casually while I was doing my day job, like, it came off like Sinatra had to introduce a lot of concepts about what was in players' contracts that they're entitled to. So much so that Elliot Friedman made like a noise, like a what? Like a hmm? And that was like, that cannot be good. And I wonder if that had something to do with it, with Sinatra maybe putting the players in an unfavorable light, like they weren't aware of everything that they're entitled to, or things of that nature. And for someone to show up at this stage when a significant portion of the women in this league have really like helped build things and have been here a while, like, they probably don't love hearing that they didn't know what was in their contracts from someone who's been here for 2 weeks, kind of a thing. Just a thought. But, you know, I've spoken to a couple people about this. I think there's a lot of avenues that, you know, the players can look into from here. Like, you can have a legal advisor. You can have more than one person try to run things. You can look into former players or even current players. Like, are there conflicts of interest there? Yeah, but I always think about this stuff as like, how small of the talent pool are you drawing from to find someone who checks off all these boxes? You have to find someone who can get the job done. And that means the list of these things, that these qualifications, these desired traits, has to get whittled down to a core small list. And there are plenty of people who have those qualifications and traits. They just have to find someone to do it. So for the players in the league. I hope they get it soon.
Hi, Franklin.
My cat just jumped on my shoulders.
I know you guys can't see it, but as Mike was finishing his impassioned speech, Franklin, his cat, jumped up onto his shoulders. He's gone now, but it was very cute. Oh, no, he's right there. There he is. This is my proposal, and this was my proposal months ago as well. I think, of course, there is some value to having a lawyer in the room. But I don't think it's because the players don't understand what their contracts say.
Yeah.
I think they do understand. I think that the value of having a lawyer in the room is being able to take what the players are telling you that they want to translate it into legal language. That's the whole point. That's my job as a lawyer in my job. That's every lawyer's job, is to talk to their client and understand what their goals are and make their client feel empowered to achieve their goals through this bizarre second weird English that we do for no particularly good reason. I mean, I like job security, but I don't think that it's quite fair. And I don't know if it's necessarily what was intended. But I also, I think this is a great example of why having a lawyer be the person maybe isn't a great fit in general, is that it's so easy to come across that way when you don't mean to, that I think that we saw having a former player do that job worked really well for a lot of reasons. And I mean, if there was someone like that, that was, could be brought in and would be interested in doing it, I think that there's no reason you can't have a director of the PA who is someone like Anya, and also have someone who can look at contracts from a legal perspective.
Yeah.
And also have someone who can do this other thing. Like, we're going to need, the league's going to need everybody, you know? And just because maybe what people are expecting is to have one person doesn't mean that that's like the direction that it needs to go in. If that's not what's working, then that's not what's working, and that's fine. I have no doubt that whatever it is they decide to do, they'll figure it out. The players know what they want. And they clearly are not going to settle for anything but what they feel they want. It's just kind of difficult timing, because ideally you would have had someone in place before the season started, and that's not what happened. So for them to have to be dealing with this, like, as playoffs are looming, is like, geez. And of course, all of them have jobs too.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot to think about.
For me, it's kind of past the optics stage, because like the optics are the optics now. So what matters, I think, especially after you had someone who held a position for 25 days or whatever Dan did the math on, like, just find someone who everyone feels comfortable with, because comfort is really important for a position like this. Someone who will make all the players feel like they're heard, that their priorities are recognized. And I feel like having a lawyer as an advisor or someone in that role is super important to negotiate with the league for things like, hey, you made this big pledge for $25 billion investment. Let's get some of this in paper, which is something that, like Alex Sinatra said on the podcast, was like, I want to be able to be in a position to help hold the league like accountable for things. Like, you make these pledges, okay, let's get it on paper so we can hold you to it. Those things all make sense to me. But I also think having someone who has the understanding of what the players' priorities are, like, it feels like there's clearly a disconnect between Sinatra and the players, and that's a shame, because I, in many ways, I was really curious to see where this would have gone with her as a director of the PA. But you know, if this is what the players want, that's what the players want. So we'll have to see what happens. I really hope we see someone who has ties to the league as a player, or maybe even like a former coach or a former GM, kind of step into that position where they know what the players' needs are. They know what the reality on the ground is. Like, they know what's important to the players, and they can serve their best interests. That's what I hope we see happen.
Yeah, and I would just to kind of wrap this up as we sort of transition into the next part of our chat tonight. It, you know, piecing together what I've kind of pieced together, it's like Miss Sinatra became friends with one of the players. that player said, hey, you know, I met this lawyer and maybe she would be good for representing us. And it didn't work out, obviously. The silver lining maybe in a way is they were unified on this. Like, as far as I can tell, I haven't heard anything different. They were all kind of like lockstep, like, okay, this isn't how we want to be portrayed. This isn't who we want representing us. And kind of like what both of you were just saying, where we need somebody that's been in the mix here for a while, right? That knows the ins and outs of whether it's women's hockey overall as a whole, the history of the NWHL, everything that's happened in the transition to the PHF and all that stuff. And maybe it would be best suited to have someone kind of like a Sinatra in that kind of role, but also maybe a co-director or however you want to word it. You know, somebody like, you know, and I'm only going to say her name, and I'm sure she probably wouldn't be interested, but I want to, that would be, I just saw a message that made me kind of crack up. I want to say Sammy Jo Small, just because of the way she spoke so eloquently, easy for me to say, this past weekend at the All-Star game. And she obviously knows the ins and outs of the game, right? She knows what the players are looking for, what they deserve, those kind of things. But maybe have her, you know, co-partner with a lawyer that can kind of talk through the legalese of the situation. And you know, they would obviously have to be lockstep and on the same page. And that's ideally maybe what they should be looking for. I'm going to bring it up because I saw it. You know, MJ threw out Lexi Bender. Why can't she be that person that handle either one of those two roles? She obviously is studying to be, or already is, a lawyer, I believe.
She's a lawyer. Yeah, she does like mergers and acquisitions work. So I'm sure she has seen many, 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 many very complicated contracts. And I think she's still based in Boston, so that would help too, because she
has perspective too. Because you just kind of mentioned something that, like, I remember talking back to her. I think it was either the second or third season maybe. After a game in Connecticut, and you know, she realized that the NWHL at the time was a startup business. You can, you know, label it however you want. You can call it this, you can call it that. At the end of the day, it's essentially a startup business, and you're going to have setbacks. Everything's not going to be, you know, a smooth ride. And she was one of the players that understood that, and why she kept kind of coming back and playing as long as she could. Because she wanted to be able to set the foundation for future things, for it to be better, for, you know, the players to get this $25 million, you know, payout over the next 3 years. Like, I that would be, you know, obviously it would catch everybody's attention and raise a lot of eyebrows, but she obviously knows the ins and outs of everything too. So, that would be great. So what did you guys think of the All-Star game last weekend? Or excuse me, the All-Star showcase. No showdown, just All-Star showcase. No,
I don't abbreviate All-Star showcase.
Or not All-Star Classic. Yeah, do not abbreviate All-Star showcase. Like,
why not? I think it's hilarious.
Three-letter acronym.
No, I love it. I was dubious. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought first of all, fans love a skills competition, and I don't think the players feel as warmly about it as the fans do, but fans love a skills comp. And there's so many great personalities around the league that to not have the skills comp felt like sad, I think. So going into it, people were bummed about that. And I was like, not super sure about the layout. I was like, I think because I have watched so many men's All-Star games that have been so boring in like a similar round robin, like, that I was like, man, like, what if this isn't fun? What if nobody scores? And then it was like a total blast. So I will eat my words on that. I thought it was so much fun. I enjoyed every single minute of it.
It was wild. Like, I would have changed a couple things. I wrote a thing for Tig about it. Like, I wish the 3-on-3 period was longer, but I also know that's kind of brutal when each team had like two lines to roll throughout the entire game. People are going to be utterly gassed because they have to play two games, especially. But I think we got to see some of the personality, obviously, with like the shootout. I rarely like shootouts, especially in the All-Star, in any All-Star event. The shootout was awesome in every single game of this. Like, it was either the goalies were unbelievable or we saw like amazing goals. Like Marchman's goal, Thunstrom's goal, obviously CJ stole the show. But like, I agree. I was equally dubious, I think, Delaney. Like, I was like, what is this? This is like three teams. What are we doing? And like, we had an All-Star draft and like, that's fun and good, but it wasn't really live. And I was like, oh, well, cut him some slack because of COVID and everything and trying to figure all this out. Overall, I thought, like, considering that this had to get moved to Buffalo and all the other things that went on behind the scenes, like, it was awesome. It was really fun. It would have made the 3-on-3 period a little longer. I thought the honorary coaches were all great. And yeah, it was just a blast. Like, we got to see, like, it was the bummer that, what was it? Was it MJ Peltier and Audie Mack who couldn't play because of COVID protocol, which stunk because, like, you know, especially in Buffalo, those two players can't play is such a bummer. But, you know, those were just the things you can't help but avoid. Overall, it was awesome. It was a great success.
I'm going to be Danny Downer, I guess.
Dan.
Let him speak.
I came into it questionable as not really a fan of All-Star games to begin with, just for a little bit of background. I don't know. I wasn't thrilled with the format. I felt like 5-on-5, it took them too long to get going. And then we got the 3-on-3, and that was great, but it wasn't long enough. The having the three teams, one team is sitting around in between games, like, I don't think that was great for everybody. The shootout I thought was great because we started to see a little bit of personality. If we're going to do this, and I understand, you know, you want to market the game, you want to market the players, I totally get that. I'm not saying abolish the All-Star game forever. If we're going to do it, let's really have personality. Let's do the skills one day, and then maybe the next day we do like a best of 7, two teams doing like trick shot shootouts. You could bring costumes. You could do, you know, have somebody, you know, come out of an equipment bag. We've seen all those kind of things. Like, if we're going to sell the game, like really try and get people talking about it, they're not going to go, oh my God, that was great. Did you see Team Dempsey beat Team Dark Angelo in the All-Star game? Like, you know, after it's over, like the next day, like nobody's, you know, after a day or two, nobody's really talking about those things. I think those moments are the shootout moments where Carly Jackson, you know, ripping off her jersey and she has another jersey underneath and she goes down and skates in with goalie pads on, with sunglasses on and scores, or, you know, like that's a pretty neat moment. And they made a damn hockey card out of it, which is pretty damn cool if you ask me. I'm a little old school where I kind of, the card thing, I was like, oh my God, like this is really cool. Like this is a big deal. Like when I grew up, like I started with baseball cards, but then it eventually became, you know, football and hockey. And, you know, I can't tell you how many Marty Brodeur cards I have laying around here in my apartment, whether there are boxes on display in plastic cases, signed, like the whole nine yards. And to think about how these players can have that kind of impact on kids or young adults or older adults that are going to be getting these cards. I think they will get them physically, right? I think that's the deal, that we get them online and then we get them physically, you know.
You better.
8 12 months.
Things like, how much money am I going to spend on these cards?
Right.
The answer was an irresponsible amount of money.
Whatever it is, right? So you want to be able to have like that physicality, and think about like some kid out there that's going to get one of these and go to a PHF game and Carly Jackson, can you sign my card for me? Like think about like what that moment will mean for Carly, but also for that kid to be like, oh my God, like she did this really cool thing and she signed my card and I got to meet her. Like that's like game changer for me. So like that, I want to see more of that stuff. I'm sorry I rained on the parade. I hate to be that person that just I don't know, like
such a Scrooge.
Give me the skills competition. Give me the hardest shot. Like I wrote this, I think in the first around the rink. Like I want Packer out there in a backwards hat, like doing accuracy shoot.
So say we all, Dan. So say we all. Jeez.
I want the skills competition back. After hearing Allie Thunstrom in the media, like they don't want the skills competition, but I think they all understand it sells the game.
I can fix it. I think the things that the players don't like about the skills competition, at least from the conversations that I've had, is not like the actual skills competition itself. It's like how it normally is done. And it sucks to be assigned to a skill that you don't like care about. Just because, like, whatever. So, like, for example, when you're watching, like, whoever, there was someone random in, like, the hardest shot competition for the men this year where it was like, why is this person here? Like, we can avoid that by having the players sort themselves. Yeah. Like, okay.
I'm fine with that.
Five of you have to do the hardest shot composition. Five of you have to do the speed competition. And you're still going to be broken up into the teams for what you're playing, right? So, like,
we don't have to have like an all-star game. We can just have an all-star event where we actually have the teams do their own competitions. You charge what, $10 for people to come in and watch the Riveters go through all their skills. And then we send the Riveter with the hardest shot to compete against the Butte and the Six and the White, the hardest shot. So we get a true hardest shot champion. We get a true fast, not just fastest all-star skater. Like, what if somebody's a faster skater than Allie Thunstrom or Jonna Curtis and they're not an all-star, right?
Grace Kleinbach almost beat her the other year.
Right. And
yeah. Pretty close.
We did, but who knows what the timing of all that stuff. Allie Thunstrom has said, like, she's cool with the all-star, you know, the skills stuff, but she doesn't want to do that fastest skater one because everybody's like, oh my God, she's going to be the fastest skater. Like,
every time, I can totally see that.
Like, you kind of always feel this pressure, like you have to be the fastest skater in the league, right? Like, so if they don't want to do it, then that's cool too. We'll have the players that, you know, maybe we get like a Kaylee Hutchison or something. You know, maybe she wasn't elected to the All-Star game, but maybe she's like the most accurate shooter on the Connecticut Whale, or you know, like those kind of things. Like, that's what I think would spice it up if they want to. Because they clearly wanted to be different with everything that they did. And kudos again to all of them for pulling it off where they were able to transition everything from Toronto to Buffalo. I know that wasn't easy. And I'm not trying to poo-poo on all that. Like, I thought they pulled it off amazingly. Just let's be a little bit different if we're actually going to be different.
The other thing they don't like about the skills comp is, like, if you're not the one that's up, you're just sitting there. Yeah. And I think that's easy to fix. I think if you had an MC who was like really good at what they were supposed to be doing, you're basically like improvising a reality show with the people who are not currently doing skills. And especially if it's going to be broadcast, you can split screen it. Like, it's not, you can have multiple things happening at a time. To have an MC like,
well, you have
asking players like
on site, which is
what?
Something they've none of the announcers for any of the games have actually been in the rink of the game.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I full transparency, I did ask them. No, I tweeted at them once. I'm sure they didn't see it. I will get myself to Buffalo. I will bring my own skates if you give me a microphone. But I actually really think, like, because the kind of stuff that the fans want to know about the players is stuff that doesn't get stuff that doesn't get asked, like, in those little blurbs that they post. Like, people want to know, like, what is the funniest TikTok that you've ever seen? Like, okay, what is the meanest thing that another girl has ever said to you on the ice, and why did it hurt your feelings? What is your go-to, if you're trying to get a ref to notice that you're getting beat up, what is your go-to, like, thing that you do to get some, like, this is the kind of stuff that no one ever talks to them about. And it's stuff that, like, they would, a lot of them would love to answer those questions instead of, like, what's your pump up song? Like, I just think that it could be done in a way that would be a lot of fun for them and a lot of fun for the fans.
I need to know everyone's pregame meal, though, Eleni. I need to know every player's
pregame meal. It's always pasta or oatmeal. It's really not that interesting.
And their superstitions and their pump-up song. Those are the things actually, you need to know.
Since you asked, my pregame snack when I was playing was pretzels. And I would not get on the ice until I had had like a handful of pretzels. And I used to like have like a bag of pretzels in my bag of gear to the point that my teammates started to call me Pretz instead of my name because half of them couldn't pronounce my name anyway. So that was my hockey nickname. It was a nice little interlude for you. But yeah, I mean, I think it can be done. I think that Dan's right. If we're going to be different and everything about this league is different than, you know, anything that anyone would have expected, just commit to it. Like, really, we can make it as weird as possible and it will work. This fan base will eat it up. So
give me a live online draft. Like the NHL had a brilliant idea with the fantasy draft style for the All-Star thing. That 1-2 years they did it and then they cut it, stopped doing it because all the players were drunk on the telecast and it was funny.
Let them be drunk.
It was great.
That's another one.
It was like, oh my God, Phil Kessel's gonna be the last guy picked, right? Like, but he's going to win a car or something. I don't remember if that was exactly it. Maybe I'm misremembering it, but like, it was a great idea. And we kind of got like you said, like we kind of got like a draft, but it wasn't live. It was kind of, they pieced it together. It was confusing. Like, is it online or is it supposed to be during the games? Like, which one are we supposed to be watching? I obviously it's tough with the, you know, you have to make the jerseys, right? So you can't, I'm sure the NHL has had an easier time of stitching the jerseys up really quick, but if you could do it like on site, like if they were in Buffalo and had the captain sit down and, you know, 20 minutes, you draft everybody, like you have, you know, little discussions and you want to try and make sure you're getting your friends and, you know, somebody you played with in college or whatever, like that. Like, I think the fans would eat that kind of stuff up. Like, it seems like, it's, you know, like you said, if we're gonna go different, let's go all out.
Michelle recommended a slowest skater competition, which I think would be really funny.
I think Pat should be involved and the puck should be on fire. Those are my two ideas for the skill competition. Like, I know we've had like a pandemic all-star game. All things considered, I thought it was pretty good. Like, lots of room for improvement. But like, I mean, everyone has ideas for how an all-star showcase or game can be better. I hope the league goes back to some of those traditional skills stuff because it's like, I think it's fun. Like, people still give a damn about the hardest shot and the fastest skater. And I'm sure for Allie Thinstrom, she's like, how many of these do I have to do in a single fucking year? But I'm sorry, Allie. You got to
let her do the hardest shot. Let her do the hardest shot.
What we should do is she should be retired from fastest skater. But yeah, I don't know. Did you guys want to touch on snubs, people you wish we saw in the All-Star Showcase that didn't get there? My biggest one is probably Levier. It was didn't make any sense to me that Lev wasn't an all-star. The other one is the fact that we only had two ribs go was kind of silly to me, and Kendall Cornine should have been there.
Yeah, I was going to say Cornine. I don't know how it's possible that people don't know how good she is, but like, she just doesn't get enough attention, which is, again, bizarre because it's not like the Riveters don't get attention, but like, yeah, she absolutely should have been there. I think it would have been very fun to have her there. I'm trying to think if there was anyone else. Everyone's an all-star to me, so.
Yeah, I mean, there was a few players where it was, they, I feel like, you know, the fans kind of forced the league hand maybe by electing all those Buffalo players, and just, it kind of just played out that way. But that's also, you know, you're like Mike said, in the middle of a pandemic season still, and you're trying to do an all-star game at the halfway point, but then games get canceled and teams aren't, you know, I think when they announced it was like maybe Buffalo had played like three games or something or five, you know, something ridiculous like that. So you're not really judging them on a full season of point production. You're rewarding players for having a good two game stretch You know, Boston had all those players and one of them had only played in two games. Like, to me, that's just weird. I understand. Again, it's All-Star, right? You want to put your most recognizable players there and all that. But you're telling me that there wasn't a more deserving player than somebody who had played two games in the season. And if it's a thing where everybody else had weekends planned, cool. I understand that. I'm pretty sure that probably wasn't the case. You know, you were in Buffalo. You could have invited, you know, another Butte, I guess, but have somebody like Elena Orlando there who's been in the league for a gazillion years and she's played.
That wasn't Emily Fluke there.
She's played in games in Japan and over here and in Canada now. So, you know, like that would have been a cool thing, but I don't know. I don't know what the solution is other than, like I said, just do away with the whole game and actually put the fastest skaters there and all that. But overall, it was a great weekend.
Yeah, it's a good sign that we're like, oh, yeah, there are more players that should have been there, even with there being three teams. So let's jump off of the All-Star Showcase and talk about some more recent stuff. There were two weekend series this weekend, but maybe we should start off by talking about some signings that were just made, because there were some pretty big signings that were just made.
Well, Mary Parker's back, which is awesome.
She officially signed Mary Parker? Do we know that?
I mean, I don't want to break it myself, but like, yeah.
Insider.
I just happened to be there today. No, yeah, I think she is signed. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed to me the impression that I had gotten is that they had signed her.
She has a jersey, which is typically a good sign when you don't have a blank jersey.
She was there at every game this season. Like, she was at every single home game. I saw her constantly. So I'm it's not like a surprise to me to see her play this weekend. And I thought she played well. I think that always she has been pretty underrated on traditionally very deep Boston teams. And I'm sure that it will remain that way this year, but it shouldn't. You should all stop sleeping on Mary Parker. And then today, as I got in the car to drive to Warrior, the Whale were like, hey, BT Dubs, we signed... We signed Sambo again. See you guys later.
Yeah, that's like, it was one of those things where Sambo coming back is just like, it's amazing that freaking out about it. Even the Whale are already really great. So like Sambo joining is just, they get just a little more great, which speaks volumes about how far the Whale have come. But like the fact that Sam Iskevich isn't instantly the best player on that team is mind boggling to me. But that's how.
I mean, she didn't have a point today, did she?
No, I don't think she had a point today. I reviewed the scoring events. I don't think she had a
point. So I noticed her in the way that you always will notice a Samoskevich. There are three of them, and all of them are professional caliber hockey players, which is incredible. I think the thing that makes me the craziest about this signing is that if you had asked me like last week if Colton Orr was allowed to add any former Whale to this roster to put it over the top, who would you pick? That's exactly who I would pick. Like, she is the embodiment of what makes this Whale team impossible to beat when they're rolling.
Yeah.
She's just like, she refuses to be bullied off the puck. She's not afraid of anything. She can pass, she can skate, she can shoot. And even though she didn't have a point today, I noticed her. Maybe because I was standing on the boards and people hit the boards a lot, but I feel like they just looked really good this weekend. And I feel like that signing, they would have probably played well anyway, but it was kind of that extra like jump today.
Do you think Boston needed Mary Parker? I don't. There's only one puck. And where does she fit in to the lineup, right? I mean, they broke
well, it's up because Rosselli's at the Olympics.
They broke up the big line to start yesterday, and that lasted for two periods. And then they put Brand, Dempsey, and Poutinho back together, and they produced one goal over four periods. I just feel like nobody's slotted in anymore. I feel like they, you know, I've seen them play live, I think once only this year, but I felt like they were all right. And I feel like bringing in a Flanagan and bringing back Parker to an extent, maybe bringing in Burt too, is kind of just disrupted things a little bit there. And they looked really non-cohesive this weekend. You know, if you're bringing in Kayla Friesen and Caitlin Russ, and you drafted Sammy Davis last year, and Taylor Wenskowski, Tori Sullivan, like where does Mary Parker fit in all that? You're rotating her as a 10th, 11th forward, or somebody else. And I just feel like the D pairs have just been like off, like something just seems off with them. They got abused today, I thought, and you were there, you were in person both games, but I thought today, like, they really got abused by that top Connecticut line was just eating them alive every shift. Like,
it started with the forwards, really. I mean, everyone got bullied today. That's just the experience that was had today, is that everybody, all the way down to Jillian Dempsey, who I have rarely in my life seen get bullied, they were just absolutely having it taken to them the entire game. What I really saw so much of was just they weren't communicating very well. And I think that is a lot because the lines kept changing. I mean, I think that they feel, it seems like keeping McManus and Dempsey on a line together is something that they would like to be able to do. And I understand why. But it's like, there's just not a lot of consistency. And it's almost like as soon as they go down, everything's got to change. And I also feel like Lovisa clearly played better when she was playing more. And there are some goalies that just play better when they play more. And they'll tell you that. And splitting seems like it's been difficult. And it kind of felt like the only goalie that you really felt like you could put in who was not going to, it wasn't going to make a difference if she was starting every game or not, is Hansen, because she's been, I mean, she was splitting when she was at BU. When they won the championship, she was splitting. I think there's been a lot of adjustment. And I do think maybe sometimes it's a little bit too much of a good thing. And it's something that I'm sure other teams would love to have that problem.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, I don't know. I feel like you've got so many players on the team that came out of UNH that, like, maybe aren't the players that you would think would put the roster over the top if you don't watch a lot of Hockey East. And maybe they should get to play more. Maybe we don't need to put McManus on a line with Dempsey. Maybe Dempsey doesn't need to play 30 minutes a game. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe you could trust Sammy Davis to backcheck like that. She does. Every game she looks more and more like Jillian Dempsey to me. It feels like a changing of the identity of the team and, like, simultaneously trying to take the next step and also, like, almost panicking and going back to what had worked before. And they've got to just pick something. Just if we're going to do that next step, like, if you really want to put whatever the line was that was super chaotic that started the game today, it was like 21, 18, 29, maybe 21, 29. Who was the other winger?
Opinion Friesen.
She was playing center though, I think.
Yesterday they started Friesen with Poutinho and Brand.
Oh, it was 17. Okay.
That was the mix up. Today, I think they were, at least just, it seemed like they went back to that original top line. And then
they did. You're right.
Mishmashed everybody together because you were playing with an uneven number of forwards. So Parker was in one shift. I didn't see Russ, I don't think, until like the third period. McManus got a shift here and there. Davis started getting more shifts because she was the only one that scored. But they also played a really good opponent. I think that's kind of, we look at these games sometimes and you're like, oh my God, this team looked horrible today, or this team looked great. And it's also, a lot of it is the matchup and the opponent, when you're catching them, how long they've had off. Like, we saw it, I think, in both series this weekend.
The thing that stands out the most to me about Boston is I don't think I paid enough attention to how much changes they had on their roster. And I think maybe they miss a player like Lexi Lang more than they thought they would, even though she's had a relatively quiet year in Minnesota. She just had a pretty solid weekend, though. But what stands out the most to me right now is, like, the whole of this team is not greater than the sum of its parts. Like, they have three of the best, like, top five D in the league in Bouillet, Fratkin, and now Flanagan. And, like, so someone like Mallory Soliotis, who's should have been an all-star for a couple of years, is kind of lost in the mix. And then players like Jenna Rowe and Lauren Kelly don't get as much ice time. It's kind of like what Eleni said, like, do we need to have these players skate 20, 25 minutes when every line is really good? Why don't you play full tempo, full Boston Pride hockey with all three of your lines and all three of your defensive pairs? And I don't think we've seen enough of that, and I think it hurts them.
I'm glad you brought up Lauren Kelly, because she has been, in my opinion, she was, like, easily one of the best Boston players all weekend.
She's been great.
I remember saying that when they played the Riveters too. And she's like, what, she's on their third pair, I guess?
Yeah, well, she has to be, because
there's nowhere else for her to go, right? Yeah. I think, like, if they would just trust that every single line can play the exact same amount of minutes, and there's no, like, situation that you can't put certain people out on the ice for, you don't need to be sheltering people for neutral zone starts or defensive zone starts. It's not that kind of team. Just let them go and let them be creative and let them, you know, whatever it is that they need to do to get going. I think that they're just, like, a little bit stuck. And on top of that, like Dan said, the Whale are just, I mean, they're really, really, really good. And one of the things that I think makes them so good is that everybody plays much as they possibly can.
The Weber line kicked the crap out of the Pride this weekend. It was like, as much as it was the Kennedy Marchman line, the Janine Weber line. Like, Weber had three assists on Saturday. She had a goal today on Sunday. Like, that line, like Kaylee Hutchison looks like a completely different player in a Whale jersey than she did as a Riveter. Like, the Whale fan. Yeah, like, they just found a way to tap into what makes Kaylee Hutchison an effective player. And that just makes the Whale just this overwhelming team that's so big and so skilled. And everyone's pissed off after they play them because they have the puck the whole game. And yeah, everyone's covered in bruises. It's just not fun to play.
I don't understand how it's possible that they have the puck so much and you still die constantly. Like, because normally what they tell you is, like, you can't hit people if you have the puck. But the Whale are proof that that's not true. Like,
the Whale rock people. Yeah.
It's just not true. Like, and I would not say that Boston is a soft team by any means, but everyone on the Whale is, like, 5'8" and angry. It's like, it's so much. It's, like, really, really so much to behold in person. And the thing is, and I think the difference is, because one of the things that I noticed is how disciplined they were. Let's not talk about the third period of today's game, because I don't think that should probably not count for anybody. But in general, that's a huge difference in 4 years where the Whale were constantly in the box. And the difference is, when they're going into contact, they're doing it, like, with a purpose and not just because they're, or a porpoise, because they're whales. Anyway. They're actually not mad. And that's what makes everybody else so mad, is that they can't be baited anymore. Like, the number of times today that McManus went into the slot, as she often does, and with the Riveters, we saw it really piss them off, and it sent them to the box, and it didn't go well for them. And Rebecca Morse just, like, took her out and stood over there and laughed at her, just laughed as she's getting up. I was like, I would not be able to cope with this. I would not be able to come back from that. Like, it's just a very different energy, and I'm excited for them, and I hope that they take this all the way to the final. I think it would be really, really fun.
They're my favorite right now.
What I saw today was, especially today when the game was at, I guess, 5-on-5, a little 4-on-4 too, because there was so many penalties. It was that top line of Gerard, Marchment, and Wolfie. They were just havoc. Boston had no answer for them. And then the next line came out, And that was like Mike described with Weber and with Vlasic and with Conway, and they start buzzing around the zone. By the time they come off the ice, the next line comes on the ice, and it was Fluke and Hutchison and either Hlinka or Samoskevich. They were alternating, I think. And they were just
there's no catching your breath.
They were
just going.
They weren't putting pucks on net really. That third grouping, I don't want to call them a third line and disrespect anybody, but they came in on their shift and they just grinded the crap out of Boston. And by the time Boston got the puck back and got it out of the zone, it was boom, that top line was coming back out on the ice, and Boston just had no answers. Like they
were gassed.
Especially that top line. I was talking with another player that wasn't in this game about Connecticut. I don't know if it was last night or today. I don't remember, but they said they're a problem because they're so big and they just kind of wear you down like over the course of a game. And can you imagine how Boston felt at the end of two games against that group? Like, I mean, but the last games Connecticut played, I forget who it was. They lit whoever it was up and they didn't even have Wolfie out of those two games. Like, it was I think they put up the same kind of thing where it was 9 or 8 goals over two games, and today especially or this weekend especially, 8 different goal scorers they had. That's just you're up and down the lineup. There's no breaks. Everybody's just kind of just flowing, and it's not like Boston where you're top line and then a mishmash line of whoever else we want to throw together, and then boom, we're back out with the Dempsey line, and then another. You know, thrown together line where there's no cohesion or anything, and Connecticut just wore them down and really like stifled them. I think Boston's power play was 0-for-7 today. Like that's some of them were maybe 10 seconds, one or two of them here or there, but 7 is a big number. Like that's a big
goose egg.
Yeah,
next to 7.
Who's
what are you? The hell is it with the pride in their power play? The team has so much skill and like just can't score power play goals. It drives me nuts.
I wonder what their practice is going to be like this week.
How many different amazing power play quarterbacks are on that team alone? Like,
they're off for a couple of weeks, right? So they're going to have some fun practices, I'm sure, the next couple of weeks.
Just to change gears, we wanted to get to the other series too. First special stick tap to Elena Orlando, 100 games played in the league. Unbelievable. Orlando is just one of those players. I know Rivers fans know her. No Whale fans know her. Just talking about the Whale now. Buttes fans are really getting to know her. Just, they don't make hockey players much tougher than Elena Orlando. Been here forever. So, big milestone. We saw Shannon Turner hit 100 just a couple games ago. So, it was great to see Elena Orlando get there. So, congrats to Lando. And, wow. The difference between Buttes fans on Saturday night and today. Woo-hoo. Saturday night was doom and gloom, and this shit sucks. This is awful. And, like so frustrated, so bummed out. What was it, 8-1 on Saturday? I know Thunstrom had a Hattie. And then today, those pesky Buttes, they roared back. CJ had one hell of a game, and I know the naysayers might say, oh, Jenna Brenneman was in. It wasn't Lev, but... deflection goals. I don't care how good you are as a goalie. Like, you can't fault goalies for deflection goals in my book, because they're just, it's like a magic puck coming at you, as Eleni knows all too well. Like, it's not fair
when pucks are deflected.
Yeah, it sucks big time. As someone who played defense in roller hockey, whenever I deflected a puck, I would look back at my goalie and say, hey, sorry about that, bud. That one's on me. Yeah, it's brutal, but it's looking at how the Buttes answered back, how they scored all those goals, like they finally seemed to have some sort of flow in the power play. Man, it's nice to see. And like the other like sub headline of this is Ali Thunstrom is 11 goals in 12 games now. So I remember when she had the 24 goals in 24 games, I was like, yeah, that'll never happen again. And here she is with 11 and 12. I'm like, all right, Ali Thunstrom, calm down. So here we are, another wild series, but it was just the win the Buttes needed. So any thoughts on this one?
I haven't watched it yet.
I'll say I watched last night, and because they actually did stagger the start times of the game. So it was nice where we were able to kind of flip over.
It is nice. We should have that.
Today, we didn't have that luxury. I did catch up on all the highlights. I talked to a few of the players, a few people rather on both sides. I don't know. I understand what you're saying. And I did look at the goals and I say, yeah, you know, it would be tough for Lev to stop that. I wonder if Buffalo, there's two sides to it for me. I wonder if Buffalo, you know, say, hey, we're going against a goalie that never started before in this league. Let's, you know, let's get more shots. Let's pepper her. Let's do all we can to create havoc and chaos in front of her. I mean, obviously you want to do that every game, right? But, you know, in this situation, the situation they were in today, and I look at maybe the other side as Minnesota looked at it like, hey, maybe we can get Lev a day off here. Because when we come, you know, after this weekend, we have all really good teams that we have to go through, here. I think they have a series with Connecticut and a couple of series with the Riveters, and those are always tough. So maybe they felt like they were kind of maybe pacing themselves. I just don't understand, not rolling with your number one. I get like you want everybody to play, but, I don't know. I would be curious to hear the decision behind, or the reasoning behind the decision to not start Lev today. And, We've seen Minnesota in the past too, where they play one great game and the next game they kind of lose their legs. A lot of times that would usually be on the road. That's not at home, and they got kind of it taken to them today. There was a couple of times where it was like, oh, it's 2-0 Buffalo. Oh my God, Minnesota scored, and I think a lot of us were thinking, here it comes. Like this is where Minnesota's going to get them, and then Buffalo added I think one or two more, and then. Minnesota add one. Here's Dunstrom now, and now they're going to get growing. And to Buffalo's credit and Jackson's credit and goal, they were able to stand up, and she had 40-something saves, maybe 40 saves.
Yeah.
Kudos to them. We're all, at least I know, Mike and I are pretty good friends with their GM, Nate. And, you know, I had texted him after the game, and he said – something to the effect of basically like he had a really strong heartfelt talk with the team this morning because basically the results just weren't acceptable. You know, we've seen players come in that weren't in the league last year, like a Kennedy Marchment, right? And she's possibly one of the MVPs at this point of the season. We haven't necessarily seen that same impact from some of the players that Buffalo brought in. They've scored, but it's been too many times where it's been one goal, two goals for an entire weekend, one goal for an entire weekend, right? Like the scoring just hasn't been there, and that changed today. I don't know if it was the talk that Nate had. I don't know if it was a different goalie. I don't know what it was, but something changed today, and that's a good, hardworking group. It's nice to see them get from different sources too today. Harley chipped in a goal and Keenan chipped in a goal, right? McDougal got one.
Jenna Suoko, first goal by a Finn.
Jenna Suoko, you know, she's a hard working player too. Like it's good to see them all kind of break out a little bit and they have a big series next weekend with the Riveters where, you know, that'd be really interesting to see positioning, right? We're coming up on the playoffs. Who's going to be, who's going to draw the short straw and have to play, Toronto or Connecticut in that first playoff game where you're going to get eliminated.
Like I said, I haven't watched it yet, but I did have a conversation with someone about Brenneman starting, not someone who played in this game, but someone who has played professional hockey and would have an opinion about this. And I was surprised to hear that her opinion was, if you are the Buttes in this situation, maybe your feelings are a little bit hurt by the Whitecaps saying, well, we can put the rookie in. It's probably fine. I'm sure that is not what was intended. And maybe there are plenty of players on the Buttes who didn't feel this way. But as soon as she said it, I was like, that would kind of piss me off if they were like, well, we don't need Lev today. It'll be fine. And like, yeah, I would. I absolutely would score a nasty goal. I absolutely would. So I wonder if that backfired on them a little bit. I think it's a nice idea. But the problem is they haven't been rotating Lev with anybody ever in the history of her playing in Minnesota.
Well, Thwaite, even on Saturday, they pulled Lev. She didn't play the third period. So Brenneman, Lev had a shutout and they took her out of the game, which I'm sure is an even bigger slap in the face potentially. Like, our goalie's shutout isn't as important as the fact that we're just going to let her rest because
I feel like that would piss me off. And like I said, it hadn't even occurred to me until this person said it to me. And I was like, actually, yeah, I would be really mad if like this, this team never plays anybody but Lev. And now they're putting this kid in who it's not like another veteran goalie. This is her first season. Yeah. And they think it's fine. They're like, we're not worried about losing to you at home. Like, oh man, I would definitely be motivated to score a goal regardless of what. And I'm sure that Nate's speech was also meant a lot to them and probably had an impact. But on top of that, like, yeah, I would be mad. I get it. And I feel bad for her because the goals that I have seen, a goalie who is able to make all of those saves on all of those deflections is an all-star goalie. That's not an average goalie workload. That's like, you got to be blocking some of those shots because, I mean, maybe you get lucky and you save one of those deflections, but to save whatever it was, like 2-3 of those goals were tip shots. I mean, there's a reason that skill is so highly sought after in net front presence players across any gender of the sport because it is just impossible. It is so hard, you know, and I hope that she feels like, I hope that poor rookie goalie doesn't feel any negative feelings about this game because I think that the chips seriously emotionally were stacked very heavily against the Whitecaps today. But I also think that's fun. I think it's fun. I think this is clearly a very serious rivalry now, which like I guess the year that the Whitecaps won the cup against the Buttes in overtime. But I feel like since then, like a lot of those players left and it was like, if you had asked me at the beginning of the season if that was a rivalry, I'd be like, no, I don't think they really care about each other that much. Oh, they hate each other now. I have never seen Minnesota get into it the way they got into it the last couple games. They get so mad. And it takes a lot to get the Minnesota Nice Girls that mad. So I think it's fun that there's this new rivalry.
I think Mike can correct me. I think Lev, if she had played today, this would have been her. If she won the game, it would have been win number 50. I want to make sure I'm not misremembering it right. But that's another weird aspect to this thing to me, too, is like, if that is the case and you're not playing her today at home, like the next two games are in Toronto, that's, you know, kind of weird to me that they would kind of do that. But I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe I read too much into it and you know, I know Lev a little bit and she would be like, whatever, you know, and just kind of shrug it off. But I don't know. I think that maybe that's the only things we think about, but that was just a weird thing to me, if I'm right.
I think Saturday was 50, Dan. I'm not positive, though. Yeah. Okay. I think she had 46 coming into the season and the Whitecaps now.
They still took her out, though.
I know. It's goofy to take, unless there was like a little nagging injury or like, hey, Lev, you deserve a little breath, like a little breath of fresh air. Like
they did that in the game in Buffalo when she lost the shutout and they just.
Yeah, the moment she lost. I remember that the moment she lost the shutout, they're like, okay.
That's fine.
Her first pro.
But when you have a shutout, don't.
Yeah. As a goalie, if I had a shutout and they pulled me, I would be pissed. I would be so mad. Like, especially the number of shots that she faces usually. She faces 40, 45 shots a game. I would be like, you have to be kidding me. Especially I mean, again, you're probably right.
Assist in that Saturday game too.
You're probably right, Dan, that it, and even if it did bother her, I'm not sure that she would admit it, but
no.
Oh man, I could tell you if it was me and I am friends with some other goalies. And I think that many of us would be, our gears would be ground. I'll put it that way.
I'll tell you exactly what Lev would say. She would say, you know what? No, I'm cool with it because Jenna's a great goalie and she's a great person. And, you know, I want to see all my teammates do well. It's no big deal to me. But like any person is at least a little sliver. You have to be like, you know, I'm a little chapped. I'd be a little chapped too. And maybe it just set a bad mood and bad vibe for today for them because they got worked out work today. And Minnesota wasn't ready to compete, and Buffalo took it to them, and They weren't able to flip that switch like we've seen them do a lot of times, and they've had these ridiculous, amazing down 4-1, down 5-1, come back and win 8-5 something kind of games, and they weren't able to do that today. They lost a chance to, with Boston getting swept too, they could have crept a little bit closer to a higher spot in the standings, and unfortunately they didn't.
Them Buttes.
How about them Buttes?
I think we'll...
Somebody on this panel is wearing a Buttes hat.
Not me. I don't know what you're talking about. I am wearing a Buttes hat. I'm a stealth fan of almost every team in the league. Probably every team in the league at this point. I think they're all very fun. I don't currently own any Toronto anything. Oh, now two of us are wearing Buttes hats. I think I own something from almost every team in the league just because the logos are so good. You know, it's hard not to cheer for all of them.
I like supporting the brands. They got some cool brands. Some of them I like a little bit more than others. But I like, you know, the being out and somebody sees it and they ask you questions about it. It's our small way of growing the game.
Yeah. A little bit. I think good merch is important for that reason, for sure. Especially like if you live in a market where there's a team too. Like
sure.
When I wear Pride stuff out in Boston, like I've definitely had conversations with people about it before where they're like, what is that? You know, actually that's one thing that happened this week that I do want to talk about is the Boston Bruins had their like diversity in hockey night. I'm not even going to touch on why that bothers me. I'll do a tweet thread if anyone cares, but all the Bruins showed up to their game wearing Boston Pride jerseys, and I'm not sure how they chose them, but some of the choices were really, really fun. We finally got to see Bergeron wearing a Dempsey jersey, which is my favorite thing. But I also felt like, you know, if you look at the replies to the tweet, people were like, oh, what is this? Like, where can I watch it? Where can I get these jerseys or whatever? And it shows so easily. It was like a great example of how even the tiniest little thing can make such a huge difference. And to think about how big the fan base for this sport and for this league is, where we haven't seen very much of that, is like, can you imagine how much bigger this could be in 3-4 years? Like, geez, that's crazy.
It's the really small gestures like that. And I think we saw it a little bit when the Devils had that 2-year partnership with the Riveters, where they actually kind of cross-marketed them. And it was nice to see, because you got like a lot of people that just show up to the game and be like, hey, I actually heard about this when I was at the Devils game. They advertised it on the billboard, or they saw me tweeting about it and decided to want to check it out because it's right in their backyard. But you see when those NHL teams, all they have to do is a small gesture like that. And like you said, you sit there and you could read through the replies. It's like a wormhole you could fall into and just see how many people had no idea that the Boston Pride existed. Like that's the smallest of gestures. And imagine if you know, and the Bruins do a lot. They do kind of right by the Pride, at least more than some of the other teams in the same cities. If they did a little bit more of that, like, you know, once a week, maybe you highlight some player on the Pride, or you have some story up, or you do a little, you know, skill competition between Jillian Dempsey and Bergeron shooting for targets or whatever. Like that's stuff that the PHF has to find a way to tap into that and use those resources to help them grow in places where you're already aligned with NHL teams. The Minnesota Wild the Whitecaps play out of the Wild's damn practice facility. Same thing with Boston and the Riveters here in New Jersey. Like how are we not exploiting these you know, connections? And it's frustrating because, you know, it felt like the Devils only wanted to do a story if it was like Amanda Kessel. Oh, Amanda Kessel is here, so let's talk about her because she's the one that everybody knows. But you had like your own local players on the team that you didn't really do much to enhance their profile, so to speak.
I'm a lot more cynical than you guys about this. I feel like the bar is on the frickin' ground for this stuff. And across the NHL teams, nothing to do this. And like putting a bunch of Bruins in Pride jerseys was the biggest obvious win-win-win-win situation. And you have all these people being like, those jerseys are cool. I'm going to go to a game. Yeah, no shit. It costs you nothing to do that for these teams. And you do nothing but get free goodwill. And like, there's all these opportunities. Have them come out to practice. Have them come out to like a video session, skill session, work with Boston, you know, Bruins skills coaches. Like, none of these things are hard to do.
The Bruins do include the pride in a lot of those things. I've seen that more than the other.
I just hope we get to see it with every team. And then I hope that we can take a step back and say, all right, so what do we have to do to make it so a team like the Connecticut Whale might have that opportunity with a team like the Bridgeport Sound Tigers and the New York Islanders organization? Like, those things are not hard for me to piece together. And I don't know anything about anything. So someone who knows things should probably piece it together. Anyway, we talked about a lot. We ended up with another movie-length episode. Is that kind of what we're going to do? This is a dangerous precedent to set, my friends.
No, I don't think it is, because we're not doing it every week. So, like...
That's true.
Oh, my God. The dog just farted. I'm sorry. I cannot continue to sit on this couch. We got to wrap it up. I heard him do it, and I know it's going to be so bad.
Willie, why, bud?
Thank you guys for listening to us. Please continue to give us feedback. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for the feedback. We really, truly appreciate it. Let us know what you like, what you don't like.
Thank you all for listening.